Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here with Sam Whitaker and Simon Anderson. The boys are back in town after a hectic weekend of sports.
Yeah, it was a hectic weekend. It was the greatest grand final I think I've ever watched.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Potentially the greatest game of code I've watched in terms of rugby league. It was right up there.
Some people in our group chat were saying in terms of sport in general, which it's hard to think of games.
Yeah.
Like, as good as that. Like, it had everything you needed from a grand final.
Was it the 03 or 04 Blues vs Crusaders final at Eden Park?
Hey! 03 is what you're 03, talking about.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's some bias, some childhood. Wow, the Blues won.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'd say maybe the 2015 Rugby World Cup? I'd say Rugby World Cup. That's me being biased with the All Blacks in terms of just enjoying
it. No, we've got to think of like a contest that was like back and forth in a close game at the end. I was thinking you would bring up the grand final NRL.
With the Thurston missed kick
and then the Ben Hunt shocker.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
Well, while we're talking about the grand final, we'll kick it off with the last accountability in terms of the NRL tip. So my best bets for it were, I just had the three and then I popped a little multi together. I had anytime try scorer Stephen Crichton at $2.70. It's given in a grand final. Winning team and margin, Panthers, 1-12 at $3. Clive Churchill winner, Nathan Cleary at $3.40. And then the multi I put together was the Panthers 1-12 into Brian To'o, Stephen Crichton, Selwyn Cobbo, all anytime try scorer in at $29, and that folded there. But if you jumped on the three props, they were really pretty. I always slap down on my bets on all of them. So I normally just throw like a tiny little $5 on it. And I accidentally hit a 50 on the Cleary Clive Churchill. Oh, and well I was done. Sitting there and I was like, I'll cash it out quickly and re-edit it. But then I went, nah, I'll ride this. And there we go. Yeah. Woke up pretty. I lost it all after that.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's a really fortunate accident. That's what my parents call me. So very, very cool stuff there. Yeah, in terms of my props, I got Panthers obviously head-to-head I'd pick. Panthers 1-12 I'd pick. But then I gave you guys a same game multi, which I had Brian To'o, Stephen Crichton, Selwyn Cobbo, Nathan Cleary, Clive Churchill, under 38.5 points. So we missed there. And then also just those other two props that I had before. So we were pretty close to getting that $226 value same game. But, you know, a few things I kind of went astray with there.
Yeah, no, same. I had under 39.5, which missed. Conversion as the last score type hit. Panthers last to score hit. Margin didn't get 11+ for the Panthers. Arthurs didn't dot down. But Tolu, did he?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, so Sweeney missed there. So what's that? Like a 50%? So three out of the six legs hit.
Okay. Yeah, nice. If you're jumping on the single legs and we're good. When they set the line at that for the overs unders, I thought that was actually a shoo-in for the points total. Yeah. I was like, that's high for a final. But man, they blew it out of the water.
Considering the other results from the regular season, they had 13-12 and then 15-4.
Yeah.
And then just turned into an electric game, which I'm thankful for.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll get into it. And what we're going to do is we'll spend a little bit of time on this. So we'll break down each half before we then talk about sort of capping the game off a little bit and discuss what's next for them in the season. But obviously the Panthers, they go back to back. Two back with a 26-24 win over the Brisbane Broncos. So the first half, it finished 8-6 to the Panthers going into the break with the lead. Flegler dotted down for the Broncos in the 39th minute, but other than that, it was just total suffocation from the Panthers. I thought Moses Leota, Fisher Harris, and Liam Martin were tremendous throughout the whole match. But at the beginning of this, they really just laid out what the standard was for these finals. Liam Martin, in particular, with his defense, he looked possessed the whole game.
Yeah.
And Moses Leota, that run against Patrick Carrigan was something else. He was an absolute... It was just the Bash Bros were in full swing, but how impressed were you guys from them?
Yeah, no, Moses Leota was a beast, and he really set Carrigan on his ass. And that was early in the game, too, so it kind of set the tone for the match and the physicality we were going to get into. And there was a bit of niggle in that first half as well. Mm. So
it's like 3 minutes in, they already were grabbing jerseys.
I mean, I know personally, I would love to have Leota and Fisher Harris on my team in the scrap. So, you know, those guys are doing their jobs there. For the game, Leota had an outstanding performance other than that run against Carrigan. One try, 163 run meters and 19 tackles. He was sensational, man. And they just absolutely suffocated, like you said, the Broncos in their own half. And I know we're going to get to that try where it was a little bit eat us with the short dropouts and maybe some tactical errors from the Broncos in terms of going for those back to back. But it is a consequence of the pressure they were put under. Obviously, those opportunities aren't going to happen for the Panthers if not for the repeat sets, if not for the relentless pressure they were putting on the Broncos line. So
exactly.
You make your own luck. And damn, they got pretty lucky because that tap back to Kenny was right in the bread basket.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was nobody there. He could have caught it, the guy that went to tap it back. Like, it
was just everything. He was way up. There was going to be Farmworth, right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
The one thing that I noticed who wasn't sort of lurking in the back was Bruce Walsh.
Because he had just got kicked in the shin like a tackle or two earlier and was kind of hobbling around feeling sorry for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one more point on Leota and Fisher Harris. One thing that kind of like goes a little bit under the radar is they don't play for the Kangaroos, so they don't compete in State of Origin.
Okay.
So throughout the season, they're not having to do that short window of the grind. So sure, they're not fresh, but they're not sort of worked down and having that full grind like the likes of Payne Haas and Kerrigan. So I do think that is something that is kind of underrated.
Get Kiwi forwards. That's what you're saying.
There we go.
Also, 8-6 to go into halftime.
Yeah.
They did look amazing when they did come down and set up that Flegler try. Like, they just needed a little bit of ball and they showed what they could do
and
with
field
it.
Field position as well. Exactly. Because they were under so much pressure.
Yeah, there was a penalty, I believe, that got them that field position, if I remember correctly. But 8-6, the coach would have been absolutely ecstatic with that and then even more ecstatic with what happened in the first 20 of the next half.
Yeah, exactly. As for Mitch Kenny's try, though, as well, the short dropout, it has been sort of something that's been gone to all season. But four short dropouts, or no, Reynolds went for the two stab kicks at the line after that. But it was a bit of a ballsy move, and that was a tinny try from Kenny. When you've got that much pressure that the Panthers were putting under them throughout that whole first half, and then to give up that kind of try, fuck, that's demoralising.
It is, but it shows the positive intent from the Broncos to play footy. Like, they were under a lot of pressure from the Panthers, and they said, fuck it, we'll go for this because we back our defense, and when we get the ball, we're going to punish you and get downfield. So I kind of like it from the Broncos, man. They really showed some good intent in this grand final. Was it right and bit them in the ass? Maybe. I mean, they lost by less than a score, so you could minus that try off and say, hey, they shouldn't have done that. But as a fan, I kind of like what they're trying to do.
For me, the difference between Dylan Edwards and Reece Walsh in this one was actually quite a big talking point. It's all been about Cleary and the what obviously happened with Ezra Mann, which we'll get into when we talk about the second half. But Edwards versus Walsh, it was evident throughout the whole game, but especially for me in the first half, I was just waiting for Reece Walsh to inject himself in the middle. I know that's a strong suit, attacking on the edge, and that's where they went to, and they went there early when they could. But what you see so much from Dylan Edwards is when he gets into that dummy half role and he relieves them that pressure. And sure, that might not be something that Walsh needs to do, especially saving his energy for that fourth tackle set. But I was just waiting for him to inject himself in the middle and get busy somehow. And as for Edwards, he's just a workhorse. He played the perfect role throughout this, and he just relieves his forwards so much. But Walsh obviously had a few line breaks, especially in the second half, which were electric. But just to compare them, 306 run meters for Dylan Edwards, 133 for Walsh, which is crazy. And he had that line break in the second half. So what did you guys take away and the differences between those two players?
Yeah, and difference is a key word here because they are different types of players. Dylan Edwards, like you said, is an absolute workhorse, an absolute fitness freak, I think.
So yeah, you brought it up.
So I was listening to the Fox build-up instead of what's the normal, like, Channel 4s on Channel 8 and Sky.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who it was on the commentary table said that since Edwards been in the Panther system at the age of 17, never lost a fitness test in the whole...
Which is crazy.
That's mentally sick.
Off days, bro. No niggling injury, I'm going to take this Bronco easy today because I've got a sore ankle. Nah, he still goes for the win.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's absolutely a huge chip on the shoulder to have that sort of performance consistently.
Yeah, exactly. And man, he is outstanding, man. That fitness shows in the way he plays because he's an absolute workhorse. His ball carrying ability, they use him a lot on the fourth tackle to get a good kickoff on fifth.
Because he plays that ball quickly.
Bro, he plays the ball quickly. He kind of always gets through, not through, but like a half break in between two tacklers, gets to his front and plays the ball insanely quick, and they can kick off that. A clean kick.
And he knows. He doesn't go for those extra yardage. He hits the tackle, he gets to his knees quickly.
Yeah.
As soon as he hears that howl called bang up.
Bang up.
What I also
think plenty of time for Cleary.
Yeah, between the difference between Walsh and And Edwards, when they carry, is that Edwards isn't so upright. I think Walsh is a lot more upright, looking to kind of exploit what's in front of him. And then a lot of the time, if he hits the defensive line, because of his upright and light frame, he's driven back a lot more, whereas Edwards knows that he's trying to hit the gain line and get up quickly. And that
goes back to what I was saying about the different types of players. Like Reece Walsh has to run upright because he's more eyes up and he's kind of surveying his outside. He likes to push opportunities and either with his playmaking or his speed, whereas Dylan Edwards is just workhorse. Obviously, he has a bit of playmaking, and when he gets the opportunity, he can make the right pass. But he's more get in the guts on fourth and fifth, do carries, do good runs, or even earlier in the set when they're trying to exit. Whereas Reece Walsh is that something that you want to spark a game open or when you've got the pressure through your forwards already.
Which it came in the second half.
Yeah.
But that's all – for me, in that first half, that was just what was just completely blaring obvious was Dylan Edwards was having these fantastic carries and getting momentum going for his team. And I think there was like two or three sets where I know Reece Walsh had hurt his ankle, but I was sort of waiting for him to just inject something. And they went to the edge and he tried to scoot them early, but it was just waiting for something back inside off Reynolds or...
And to make another weird analogy, their play styles, it would almost be comparative to Dylan Edwards as like a Chris Paul and Reece Walsh is like a James Harden, whereas Chris Paul will, you know... like do the basics and the fundamentals. He might not have eye-popping like stats or moments and stuff, but he'll get your team a win through like hard work and just like controlling the floor. Whereas James Harden is more electric and he can lose you a game because he takes risky shots and he makes risky plays, but he also has that ability to spark open a game with his showtime footy. So
exactly. The other one in the first half for me as well was Katoni Staggs. I thought he was an absolute machine. Defensively, he was just whacking people. When it came to the second half, it's like it was like a bull and Nathan Cleary had this big red flag on him and he was just shooting. First half, though, carried like an absolute dog, machine on defense. The only thing that he had was that little bobble under pressure on his line. But, man, he looked gassed. But that dude was impressive.
Yeah, he is. And honestly, he's been underrated all season. I think he's been kind of like the unspoken beast at the center position. And it's good to see that he made the Kangaroos as well, because I've been wondering when he's been going to get an opportunity. He didn't get it with the Blues this year. He's had it with the Blues before with that one test a couple years ago, but it's good to see him get some opportunity at rep footy because he's been playing like an animal and he's just an explosive athlete, bro. So hard to tackle, so hard when he does tackle.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was impressive again in the big moment.
He's got a hell of a motor. Second half, we move into there and wham, bam, Ezra Mam. 45th minute, 53rd minute, 55th minute, the Dally M 5-8 of the year scores a hat-trick in the grand final. Try number one, super impressive alone. He just cut through and then that finish on Edwards as well, who's no snail himself. And it was looking like the Clive Churchill performance was there and there was no coming back for the Panthers. But how did you
right in his grasp,
how do you guys find Ezra Mann's performance? The week just beforehand on the podcast, we were talking about him being the 5-8 Dally M of the year whenever,
and I remember being kind of critical of that pick and thinking, did he deserve it over the likes of your Cody Walkers and I forget who else was in contention? I believe Jerome Hughes.
Munster?
Yeah, okay. So that performance, that definitely shut me up a little bit because that shows what he brings to the game, and that's electricity and speed, much like your Reece Walsh. And I did kind of allude to it last week. I obviously picked the Panthers, but I said, if the Broncos would win this game, it would be in spectacular fashion because they just have the ability to explode on teams just like that. Mm-hmm. And it looked for all money like it was going that way. I know you came in early with the early call thinking it was done, but yeah, they were amazing. Ezra Mann, the speed is crazy. Top speed, fastest in the game, 34.6 kilometers an hour. Like you said, absolutely skinning Dylan Edwards.
Yeah.
That's as fast as like Tyreek Hill and Achan in the NFL, which are like proper sprinters, so that is impressive.
It was kind of wild how he did it as well, because Dylan Edwards didn't have like a bad angle either. Dylan Edwards was coming up and he just hit him on like the outside and then just skirted him. It was just like, catch you later. And he's cheeky as well. He was like real cheeky.
And much you pointed something out to me as well. A guy they were picking on, I don't want to throw shade on someone, they won the championship, was Lindsey Smith.
Yeah.
He was having a shocker. He didn't look fit out there, and he was really getting picked on by Ezra Mam. Two of those tries were on Lindsey Smith's holes.
You know who the first one was on as well?
Who was that?
Cleary.
Oh, yeah, there was.
So he took that personal.
There was that one where Cleary shot out of the line and gave it. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the second half, you could almost summarize into two blocks. It was like the Mam show and then the Cleary closer. Like,
you were watching a game at NFL. there were we had four quarters of that.
It was. I mean, well, the first half was pretty similar in content, but the second half was very distinct in the way it started. Fantastic for the Broncos, and both of Mam's tries very similar in the way he made a defensive read again and spotted a weak inside shoulder and exploited it with just fantastic footwork. But it was just like there wasn't too much happening. There wasn't a crazy amount of shape and movement where before he got the ball. He was just out on an edge, saw a forward that wasn't pushing hard enough, and just boom, left foot, gone. It was fantastic. And like you said, that's definitely elevated him to that Dally in position because there ain't many people in the halves that are moving like that.
And he could have had some more silverware. He could have had the Clive Churchill if it weren't for one man.
Yeah. It is crazy when you talk, when we're thinking about it. But. Yeah. And like we talk about Munster throughout this whole playoffs, and he's a guy that steps up in the big moment and makes these big plays. And in the biggest moment when they were down, Ezra Mam stepped up and proved that he's got the goods as well. Yeah, so it's good for them moving forward. In the 52nd minute, though, Jack Cogger came on for Luai, who was having more shoulder problems. Broncos had only just taken the lead at that point as well before absolutely piling on the points. And it got to 24-8 to go in the 57th minute. And they looked out on their feet. When Luai came, I was thinking, oh, here we go. Like, someone's going to have to, is it going to be just completely Cleary, or who else is going to step up?
So and clutch, man.
For me, it was Crichton started to move into that area as well. He had some really good touches. Big game player. He played well in these big moments. Nice touches on the edge. The kicking, the little kicks that he put in were really, really good. The try he scored was absolutely perfect as well. They're going to miss him because he's been out on that right edge, and we can just throw him in here on that left edge, and he just played absolutely outstanding. So what did you guys think of Crichton's performance?
Yeah, no, Crichton was outstanding, especially down the clutch in that last 20 minutes. He was kind of forgotten about because of the effect Cleary had on the game, but you could tell he was starting to have a bit of a chip on his shoulder and a bit of drive in the way he was inserting himself as well. And yeah, he will definitely be missed. I'm never going to ride out the Panthers because they just seem to be losing these pieces and the cogs keep spinning on the wheel and they keep winning titles, the three-peat. But he was sensational and he did show his value, and it's going to be a hard man to replace because he's just got a nous for the game. Those kicks showed that he has a nous on attack. We know what he does on defense. His ability to shut down and read plays is second to none in this competition. So, yeah, big loss, but another big performance in a big game.
Yeah, he showed up massively. Like his try was fantastic. Like textbook Panthers shape, lots of players in motion, ball at the line. And then he still had three Broncos on him as he was crossing the try line, and just shrugged them all off. You know, like he's not an incredibly imposing figure. You compare him just like with someone, Tony Staggs, who's a little bit more muscle bound and looks like a brute.
Fairly tall though.
Yeah. But yeah,
he's got calves that pop, man. Yeah. Those are big.
Yeah. Well, let's be careful with how much, what, you know, when we take that conversation, but the try was fantastic. I'll go back to that.
I mean, his calves are popping, but I think To'o has probably got him for calves.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to Nathan Cleary.
Oh, random side note. Have you seen the Tongan halfbacks, reserve halfbacks calves?
No.
Sione Takalua? Next time you watch a Tongan game, I think they're in their last game against Romania, so you probably won't watch it.
But do the socks not even go up?
Bro, biggest calves in rugby or rugby league, period. But anyway,
he's got slits in the elastic in his socks.
They just split and they come up and he tapes them up top. All right, Nathan Cleary. Put the whole team on his absolute back. You want to sit down? I've got a little bit to spiel off here. The try he set up for Leota when he sliced through the D gives him the pill to go underneath the sticks. The Panthers all year, they're a team that celebrates a try, and they kind of knew that this didn't really mean that much at that moment. But again, Cleary changed the game.
I disagree. I thought that meant a lot because the momentum shifted. And I agree. I said they need one moment and that was it.
I agree, but I just mean in terms of the way that the Panthers celebrate a try, it was like try business.
Job's
like,
not done.
That's not, Cleary, though, again, changes around a play with his 40-20 off the back of points, goes straight back to his guy, Stephen Crichton. The bit I like about this is he shifted Cogger into that first receiver role so he can dictate exactly where the ball goes and give it straight to his guy because he knows he has the big plays in those big moments. 76th minute, pops up again on the left. They overplay towards Crichton and then he just comes back and bang, cuts them to bits. scores a try to take the lead. Absolute masterclass. One of the greatest performances, or one of the great performances for the ages. For me, a king was born. He is no longer the Prince of Penrith anymore.
No.
Possession was split through this, 56 to 44 in favour of Penrith. They had 320 more run metres, the Panthers did, and just over 50 more post-contact metres. The most generic stats, they were pretty even throughout this. Obviously, forced dropouts, 4-0, which just shows the amount of pressure that they put the Broncos under. And we come to this. They made less tackles than the Broncos, missed more of them, but why did Brisbane look so gassed when Nathan put his foot on the throat? 97% completion rate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a grand final, 37 of 38 completed sets. They gave the Broncos one chance. One chance they let their foot off the throat. Oh. Absolutely wild. And when that guy put his foot down when the moment counted, he'd done the work earlier. They'd grinded them to a full stop. So impressive.
Yeah. And investing. You'll like this term because it's a UFC term. It's what the fighters do. Yeah. They invest by going for leg kicks, chopping at the legs throughout the whole fight, and then opportunities eventually come later on in the fight. And that's exactly what happened here. Nathan Cleary, probably the clutchest performance I've ever seen from a half in such a big moment like a grand final. The best comeback in a grand final that I've seen that I can remember.
He had his hands in every single play.
Yeah.
It was everything.
Every single play. And you just stated it out before. It was from the 62nd minute all the way through to the 77th to get that lead. Just that 15-minute window where he just was unstoppable, man. Mm. And he just knew what to do to get his team the win. He's probably the best player I've ever seen if I'm just looking at it with my own two eyes.
It's fine. He's 25 years old.
He's 25 years old. And I said I would skyrocket him into my top five greatest players of all time. I do now have him sitting at fourth place.
Yeah.
So I've had him jump not only Jared Hayne, which I said was five. I had him jumping Greg Inglis as well because I haven't seen Greg Inglis was a beast and a physical phenom. But just the control Cleary did to this game. Different. Three premierships now as well.
25 years old.
It's definitely on track to become the greatest player this game may have potentially ever seen.
And enjoy it. Yeah. Enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah. You could end up like PMJ. Six chips.
Imagine six chips on the trot. Imagine 11 chips. He beats the Illawarra Dragons.
Imagine his final chip at home with the Waz, his dad coaching.
Yeah.
I never see it happening, but it would have been great.
And the Waz beat him. Stop him from getting the chip.
No, he plays for the Waz.
He gets his final
chip with the Waz as Cleary coach as well.
Oh, I would love that.
But here's my assessment of the final 20 minutes of Cleary. A very identical way he sets up Lyota's try with the man. He identifies there is a lagging big man on the inside, right foot step, palm in the middle of the chest, and just goes straight through, sets him up under the post. Then the 40-20 is crazy, bro, because I was watching it. He's running towards the right-hand side of the touchline. He's like 20 meters in and then kicks across his body to the far touchline and drills it easy as for that 40-20 to set up Crichton.
You know what's smart about that is as a fullback, you're shifting where the ball's going.
Yeah.
And because he does that so early and they're thinking he's going to shift it early on the fourth to get a good kick away. And so he shifts early to the right. And then like you said, it is so hard to kick across your body like that, but to kick a 40-20 across your body like that as well.
And a Steedon too. But then, you know, he sets up the Crichton try like we've talked about, but then I analyzed this final one because I was like, how did this happen, right? They were all defense up. Like there was man on man on that short side. But what happens is Ricky is the marker on the short side. And as the play goes to Cleary, he shoots under like a fullback and he tracks behind. He's not in the line. And so Cleary sees that. So he steps, Reynolds steps inside the next guy and goes straight at that hole where the mark was. And Walsh was on the other side of the ruck. He doesn't come into the short side at all. And then that's where that hole is. But it's fantastic split second read to see.
7D chess.
Yeah, bro. To see Ricky slide under straight away and just go bop off the left foot and then straight into that hole.
And that hole's like, there because they're fucked. Because like you said, they've been leg kicking them all game. It's just wild.
Yeah, and it's crazy that you say the Panthers gave them one opportunity.
One.
Because the Broncos, although they had their moments of spectacular attack, they did the opposite. They had 11 errors in this game. So, yeah, they were just going for haymakers. And sometimes they were landing big haymakers, but the leg kicks were doing their damage, man. And who's a better leg kicker than Nathan Cleary? Who, I might add, slotted all the kicks as well in the clutch.
Yeah.
Far out.
Absolutely wild. And with a fucked MCL at the moment. So, yeah. And he did that relatively early on in the game.
They were testing it early and everyone was like, oh God, here
we
go.
I was thinking the same. As soon as like Luai was sort of a little bit shaky and then the MCL's looking like, I was like, oh man. Before we move into what's next for them coming next season, is there anything else that you guys wanted to bring up on the game?
I just wanted to highlight Payne Haas because I thought he was outstanding in this game. 150 run meters, 6 tackle breaks, 3 offloads, which his offloading ability is actually getting up there with some of the best in the game, and 41 tackles. So a rare combination of a workhorse and a monster. And I think him and Carrigan might have the deadliest forward combo in the competition because they run so hard off each other's carries. Like it'll be strong carry, play of the ball, or strong carry, offload. Mm-hmm. And they're right there for that next carry. And they make a lot of meters and hurt a lot of teams up the middle. They even did it to the Warriors, who the Warriors are traditionally pretty competitive through the middle with most teams. So, yeah, those two are strong and they're going to be a dangerous problem next year. Hopefully they can, you know, keep this form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The only thing I want to say is just taking it straight out of JT's playbook, and it's clear that defense wins championships. None of the tries came from overly flashy individual brilliance. The ones that were individual were people highlighting weaknesses in their defensive formation. The Cleary's final try, he's setting up Leota, Mams, both of his tries, Walsh setting him up. Like it was just one player breaking the line where there was somebody lapsing. Yep. And so it's just super clear. And the fact that they went for these short kickoffs, I mean, you don't want to pinpoint one or two moments where the game lost, but I mean, if they'd never kicked short, they never would have scored that try. They never would have got the 2-point penalty to go up 8-0.
They had to roll the dice because were just completing these sets, the stupid completion rate, and it was like, fuck, we need to try and get the ball back somehow.
Yeah. I think the Broncos will die wondering, you know, like, fuck, what if?
Yeah.
Which is quite sad, but I mean, it was fantastic footy for the fans.
Yeah.
Young team, though, and they've been there now and they've done that. Before we move on, I thought Billy Walters was really, really good as well. Yeah. And early on when he kicked that 40-20, it was like, fuck, that's like a Cam Smith kind of move. Yeah. Like the way that he's developed into this hooker role is really exciting for them moving
forward.
Big
time Billy.
Yeah,
Billy. I forgot about that moment, but that was quite crucial.
Because this is a guy that's not going to get paid a hell of a lot of coin, but if he can come up with those sort of plays and these sort of moments, great for them. What's next, though? The Broncos, so they gained Fletcher Baker. They're losing Herbie, Frigler, and Palacia. They've re-signed Arthurs, Carrigan, Haas, Tristan Saylor, and Marty Tapu'u. What are you thinking for the Broncos next year?
Yeah, well, the grand final proved that all the pieces are there to win a premiership. They were right on the doorstep of winning the premiership this year. And you know, the thing that undid them, as cliche as it sounds, was experience. Yep. They played a little bit loose in that grand final. They made some errors and they were competing against a team who was super clinical and had been there before and were comfortable in completing 97% of their sets and just suffocating the Broncos and getting themselves a championship. So I think with another opportunity in that same position, with the lessons they learned from the mistakes they made in this grand final, they are a real chance again. They do lose Herbie, which is
a big
loss. He was fantastic for them all year. He was probably the best center in the competition form-wise. I don't know if you could say he's the best center just out and out on raw talent and ability.
I agree.
But in terms of ball carrying, he was fantastic. But if they can get someone that can do 70% of what he does on the offense and they learn from these mistakes and they're right there in a position next year, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but they are my early odds on winning the premiership next year.
Yeah.
The Brisbane Broncos.
Interesting. Yeah. I do think they have a lot of the pieces to go back and at least make the grand final. And I'd probably say that with quite certainty and confidence that they'll be back there again. But the whole season, Reynolds was a huge factor in their success. And
you brought that up.
And a man with a bit of an aging career and, you know, the Rabbitohs were only going to give him one more year. Like,
window's shutting.
Yeah, exactly.
And he does pick up a few injuries now during the seasons. He even picked up an injury in the final. His hip wasn't
groin,
too good.
Yeah.
That's right.
Groin, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a fantastic young partner that can take control of a game, which we saw in the second half with Mam. So it's not all doom and gloom, but yeah, it's the biggest concern, I'd say, alongside having a replacement for that that hole in the centres now. So yeah, not massive concerns. They'll definitely make top four, look to be in the grand final. They just need to kind of build on that experience and just
be hungry again for it.
Exactly. That might be the chip on the shoulder that they need to get over.
They played with a chip on their shoulder this year because of what happened last year and the way that they missed the playoffs and that whole run. And you could see that it just meant a little bit more again this season. And they're a powerhouse. And like you said, they've got Payne Haas and Patrick Carrigan. So they're going to have a platform to play off no matter what. And it's what they do from there. And in terms of health, I think Jesse Arthurs might have that left wing locked up to start the season next year. That dude played his best game in the grand final. Those two runs that he had were absolutely unbelievable. But it will be interesting to see what they do with that left centre spot. Whether it is something that we'll start to see Cobbo move into, I know there's been discussion around what is for the future for him, whether it's a centre or a fullback. I think he's really gone into a shell after not making Origin after that. He was quite quiet to start the season, but where they fill that hole, because it's a big hole now, will be interesting. As for the Panthers, they game Paul Alamonte, Dane Laurie, Riley Price, the young Stephen Price's son, and Brad Schneider. Losses, they lose Jack Cogger to the Knights, Stephen Crichton obviously to the Bulldogs, and Spencer Lingyu to the Bulldogs along with Jamin Salmon. They've re-signed a heap though, Edwards, Leota, Sony Luke, Liam Martin, Peachy, Lindsay Smith, Scotty Sorensen, To'o and Yao, so... Oh my God, it's still just, it's like next man
and
up.
Their pickups are pretty good as well. Alamonte, Taff, who else was going there? Not Taff.
No, it wasn't Taff. It was Dane Laurie, Riley Price.
Dane Laurie, sorry. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, so they've actually got some good pickups and the talent's just still there. They do lose more than they gain, in my opinion. Crichton is crucial. Lenu is crucial. He has been an absolute beast off the bench.
We said that, though, last year with Uppy when he left. Like, how are they going to fill this?
That was my point I was going to get to. Even when you think the dynasty is done and the cracks are going to show, there's going to be vulnerability showing some cracks in the Penrith Panthers, they just continue going. And you said it a couple of weeks ago, this might be the best the Panthers have ever looked. And it's hard to complain when they put out performances like they did with 97% completion rate in a grand final and back-to-back games leading into that grand final with over 80% completion rate and extremely high accuracy. So I'll never write them out. But my odds are on, at this point, them not going back-to-back-to-back just on the basis that it's so rare to maintain this level of quality and dominance for so long, man. So I don't think the Panthers will get it done next year, but they're going to be right there.
I've got no conviction on it,
to be honest, because they just proved me wrong this year as well.
Yeah, it's so hard to write them off. I mean, like, they didn't have the most amazing start to the season, but just managed to just I don't know, had the most fantastic form, like you said, with the completion rate, just scary accurate, disciplined. But without losing the venom in the way that they played. So they are an extremely scary team to play. And I guess my money's on a repeat final. I mean, besides really reviewing the moves the other teams are making, and I mean, from what I've seen so far, nobody's really having that much of an improvement in their squad yet. So yeah, these two teams showed that they're a class above everybody else. And I think we'll just see that continue.
Is this dynasty more impressive yet than the Storm dynasty with Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater, and Cameron Smith?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That thing's just been formed.
Do they not need to prove it with longevity yet, or are you happy to give it to
them? I'm happy with three-peat like that. In terms of the movement that they've had around the squad and the pieces that they've lost and the core sort of nucleus that's been able to do what it's done, the origin stages that they've played on as well throughout this. Yeah, I'm saying it's more impressive.
I guess the Storm technically only won three.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They were paying salary, too much.
Yeah, the salary cap. Yeah, there's no salary cap allegations yet. I mean, we'll never know.
I mean, they keep losing players, so it seems pretty by the book.
Yeah. Maybe Cleary's just getting paid an allowance from his dad.
Something like that. $2 million allowance.
Yeah, there's some real cheap houses going up in the Penrith area.
Before we move off into like a closing sort of segment, we're talking about who would be the silliest in terms of their celebrations afterwards. And I had To'o, I can't remember who, I think
Gerard
Lua. I was checking his story. He was getting a little bit mouthy with it. It was just like, ha 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 on a whole heap of shit.
Yeah, who's
and
got
you had
work on,
Walshy, but he's just been getting roasted by Fisher Harris and that. Yeah.
Your mom. Yeah. It was cooked as 2 days later in some backyard. Who's mom? Your dad.
But there was a man that stepped up. that I didn't think would, and that was Ivan Cleary.
Oh, yeah,
he was the he red was eye enjoying interview. It. Yeah, yeah, that was actually some funny scenes from him. Some of the content that he's been putting out there, it's actually been good to see him sort of just let his head down. He's been roasting his son, and it's been funny to see. So for me, Ivan is like we're talking,
yeah,
exactly. And we talk about this Panthers success and the players that they've lost, but the coaches that they've lost as well. And the, what Ivan seems to keep doing and bringing up and reproducing, he's given the Warriors a gem, and we've got Serrato with the Bulldogs yet to see what he can do. And then we just see what Ivan does again with whoever else is behind closed doors. And I don't think he gets the appreciation sort of that he does, because we've gone back to back to back.
That is
and
true.
The grand final beforehand, not once has he been named coach of the year.
Yeah,
it's crazy what he's been doing. So it was good to see him let his hair down.
Damn, that is crazy that he hasn't been coach of the year. That is very surprising. Yeah. Then I definitely agree with you. He definitely needs a lot more respect on his name, because, we all lord over Nathan Cleary, Isaiah Yeo, Jerome Luai, all these guys that are, you know, on the field putting it together. But it's such a structured, clinical team. You got to give the coach more credit. So, yeah, I've been sleeping, low-key.
What's so important is team culture, and he's just, even in his interviews, he's like kind of smug a little bit about it. He knows how to carry himself well within the media and all of that kind of stuff. It was just, it's impressive. And I love that he just sort of cut loose a little bit as well.
Bro, the balls to do an interview on live breakfast TV at 6 a.m. is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, when you've won a championship, your confidence is peaking.
And like that, three of them.
Something was peaking, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's a mixture of championship confidence and powdered confidence.
So what we're going to do to close off the NRL season is we're going to talk about our favourite moment from the year. So what I'm going to do is close your eyes for a second. I'm going to take you back to round 16, and the Tigers are playing the Melbourne Storm, and there is a man that we drip fed into our Anytime Jam multis, hoping to just be
like degenerates,
a part of history. And on this day, history was made. In the 23rd minute, Alex Twile ran over the line. He saw a Steedon in the in goal, and like any good Tiger, he pounced on it, dotting down for his first try in what was 116 NRL matches. I was sitting on the couch, sipping a nice cold crafty, and I couldn't believe what I saw. I was quickly scrambling for my phone. It took over the news, and it was something that had been joked about for so long, and it finally happened. That whole week was just Alex Twile everything. He started to get offers from other rival NRL clubs now that we've seen some try scoring potential. Yeah. But for me, that was my favourite moment of the year, seeing that big fella score. And it's something that we're not going to ever talk about again. And so he got it done.
It's something that we might not ever see again as well.
Exactly.
If it gave him 100, if it took him 116 games to get there, who's to say it won't take another 116 games?
Yeah.
And I was at Northern Union when after a game of rugby when we saw that. And it literally, everyone was just mingling, talking, and then someone was just like, oh, bro, bro, bro. And then the whole bar outside just looked up and was like, yeah! Not even watching the game, but that one moment brought the whole bar outside together. So Alex Twile, shout out, man.
I think I was telling you that I'd thrown him in a multi the week beforehand or something.
Because
I'd just every now and then drip fed and was just like, surely it comes. And then it came.
You just feel like being a degen sometime, like, yeah, fuck it, Alex Twile.
I'm calling it.
Yeah, no, he fell on that ball like a live grenade. It was, I mean, you don't get that many opportunities in your career. So,
Clemmer nearly stole
it
too.
Yeah, he did,
But luckily he knew the situation. And then you could see the adulation from the teammates, bro. It was an important moment for all of them. So shout out him.
At Mad Monday, do you reckon he still did a nutty run just out of habit?
Okay, nutty run.
Everyone go. He's already got his kid off.
Oh, wait, fuck.
He always wins this race.
He's usually the only one.
So what did you guys take away?
I'll let you go first because I feel like I might have stolen one, and I've got a few options. So
okay, no worries. All right, well, let me cast your mind even further back. We're going back to the fifth round. It's a rainy evening in PointsBet Stadium, Sydney, and it's Sharks versus Warriors, and it was one of the most special games that the Warriors have put together this season. Just the final edge. I mean, we were well behind for the majority of this game, but the final play, Curran toes a loose ball through. Dives on it, leading to the penalty. It's 30-all in the pouring rain, and Shawnee, the past Shark, steps up, nails the kick, and we win 32-30. And it was probably one of the first moments of this whole season where we all as the Warriors things are different. The resilience, the determination to come back in a wet game away, like so many years gone by, the team would just fold and we'd just be a bit of a formality and lose by 15 to 20 points. But the fact that we clawed our way back into that game with some really huge performances, you know, it was just a fantastic game to watch. And yeah, early signs that we could go deep, and look what happened.
Yeah, it was a result that flipped the narrative completely, because the Warriors were known as the team that gets a lead at halftime and then drops it. And then when we were down by so much going into the second half, and to turn a result in such difficult conditions in the manner we turned it, by just controlling it through the middle with our forwards, and then Shawnee playing outstanding to get the job done, it was kind of like a, oh, we're a second half team now. This is good. This is real good. And started the up the wires movement, and here we are today, man.
Exactly. I love the team talk that he in the interviews afterwards, he said at halftime they were in the sheds and it was a bit quiet, and he just started going, our kids are going to remember this. Like, this is something. It was just real cheesy. Yeah. But, man, he put that on his back. The ending to that, though, was wild, because Nico Hines had a penalty, I think, on the left edge to then potentially send it to Golden Point as well. And he was all hothead Nico and the wet, and that was flowing. It was like, here we go. But then it misses. And like you said, it started a movement for us and for the Sharkies, because they could not beat a top eight team.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's good that I knew you were going to go something Warriors, so that's why I didn't really – I wanted you to go first, because I thought you were going to take this one, and that was – casting your mind back not so long ago to the peak of the Up the Wires movement, and that was at Mount Smart Stadium in the semi-final against the Newcastle Knights. 42-12 they won, and just the atmosphere of the first, it's not Mount Smart now, I guess, Go Media Stadium final in, what is it, 15 years since 2008 or something? Or 2010?
I think it might have been 11 years. It's skipping my mind. So
Anyway, it's a long time since we've had a final.
Over a decade. We'll say
it's
that.
It's been a very long time. And the fans, you could tell the energy was there. And the standing ovation that Sean Johnson got as he went off on the opposite side of the field and made his lap around the field and got the adulation of the fans. And then also the Warriors singing the Warriors song, which I didn't even know we had. That's how long it's been since we won.
They've been doing that throughout the season. They started to go throughout the season. Oh, okay. They throw it up on the big screens and let the whole crowd. I didn't go to a home game this season.
No, well, shout out the social media team, because they'd put the video up of the team singing the song in the sheds afterwards, and it just got so much like heat in the comments of like, you know, what are the words? Get out, like, let's get the crowd involved. And then they did like a collab with Shea Fu. And made like a proper version of the song. And so after the games, like in the last like few rounds of the regular season, they started playing the song out loud after the win and got the whole crowd involved. That's special.
Amazing atmosphere.
Before you move on, I love it, but I find that so disrespectful on the other side of that as well. Because when you're playing footy, and if you've lost a game and you go back into the sheds and you hear the other team singing their song in the changing room next door and you're just sipping your beer and you're like, fuck those cunts. And then you've got a whole stadium singing the song that you've literally just lost on the field, and just 30,000 people, 25,000 people getting behind you.
Nah, fuck it.
It's just wild.
I mean, with the Souths,
win the game.
For the longest time, every time the Souths would win at home, there would be glory. Sharks
always do their song as well.
That is true.
Fuck them.
So that is the NRL over for us. But what we've also got is the NPC has just moved into the quarterfinal stages. So what we're going to do is we're going to do just a couple of quick picks before we move into the Rugby World Cup. You've got the odds, Jordan. So I do.
So on Friday, it starts off with number 3, Canterbury, $1.54 favourite, taking on number 6, Auckland, $2.50 underdog, with the line sitting at plus 4.5. Sammy, where are you leaning in this one?
Well, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is having a hell of a season for Auckland right now. Ooh, I think he's leading.
Did last week.
Oh, didn't he? Sorry. But I think he's leading the competition in terms of
He ran well, but it was a lot of defensive lapses and things. But
anyway. There we go. I'm leaning towards Canterbury in this one.
Red
and black always seem to win. There we go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to have to take a fantastic Auckland performance similar to what Brisbane need to do to beat the Panthers. But yeah, finals footy is just so conducive to the Canterbury team, so I'm going to pick them with a close one.
Okay, yeah, so Auckland did beat Canterbury 36-29 back in earlier in the rounds in this competition. Both teams have 6 wins on the year, and they've been less impressive this year with some upset losses to Counties Manukau, pipped Canterbury, and then Manawatu pipped Auckland as well. But Canterbury still averaged the highest points per game in the competition, 35.1. So I will back them at home as well. Canterbury 1-12 at $2.50.
Nice.
Cool. So the next one on Saturday, we've got a double header. We've got number 1 Wellington, $1.25 favourites, taking on number 8 Waikato, $4 underdogs, with the line sitting at plus 10.5. Sam, where do you see this one going?
I'm going to go with the less possessed Wellington now that they don't have the shield on their hands anymore. I feel like they'll be seeing a little bit more straight and maybe not have too many demons in their closet anymore. So yeah. Wellington.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this one for Waikato is a bit of an uphill battle into a stiff Wellington breeze. This is going to be, it's going to be a tough challenge. Nice. Yeah. A tough challenge for this Waikato team. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I just don't know how... why can I get this done? And I've just got in my notes. It's like, did Wellington sacrifice the shield to ensure that their season goes deep into the finals just to get that kind of monkey off
showed,
their back?
We showed the effect sacrifice. Of the shield. Yeah. Yeah. The effect of the shield is negative at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it even a shield anymore?
No. It's the effect of the 2 bits of wood.
Yeah, the splinters. Yeah. Well, it's bits of wood and some plaster. Yeah.
It's epoxy. They got the dust and they trying to find some water, make a nice little glue.
And then
it together.
Nice, they use the $5 note for the applicator.
Yeah.
Well, you need to spread it, smoothen it.
But yeah, no, I'm picking Wellington probably easily.
Yeah, so Wellington did beat Waikato 41-24 in the regular season. Wellington have only lost 1 game, and that was that last game coming into the finals to lose the shield against Hawke's Bay. And Waikato actually coming into the finals with 3 wins on the trot. Pretty impressive form considering the rough start that they had. I would consider a Waikato line take if Wellington weren't such a powerhouse, because honestly, Waikato have actually looked pretty good. They've got a win over Auckland comfortably and then a win over Canterbury last week.
Mm.
But, you know, defense... You know, I'm that guy. Defense wins championships. Wellington are averaging the best defense in the competition, only 14.8 points per game. Wow. I'm going Wellington 1-12 at $2.60. But the next game on the double header, number 2 Taranaki, $1.78 favorite, take on number 7 Tasman, $2.05 underdog, with the line sitting at plus 1.5. Sammy?
Well, you can't ever ride out a Tasman Marco team, but they do have Ethan Blackadder's over at the Rugby World Cup at the moment, which is a big loss for them. Taranaki have been in some great form as well, so that's where I'm going to be leaning to. The yellow and black bumblebees will get that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well. I did note that Tasman beat them 4 rounds ago, 29-18, so it is possible for them to do it again. But like I said, Blackhead is a huge piece to that that Tasman team. I would like to see Tasman get up, but yeah, I think Taranaki have done enough to secure the second spot, and I think they'll go through.
Yeah, I agree with you guys, because despite that result, Tasman beating Taranaki, both teams are coming in on polar opposite form, with Naki destroying Harbour 54-21 and Tasman getting destroyed by Bay of Plenty 41-12. And Taranaki have 7 wins and average 30 points per game to Tasman's 23 points per game. And Naki are also riding a 3-win streak into the finals. So I will back them as well. Taranaki 1-12 at $2.60. And then our final game on Sunday, we have number 4 Bay of Plenty, $1.62, taking on number 5 Hawke's Bay, $2.30, with the line sitting at plus 3.5. Battle of the Bay, Sam. Which one takes the shield? The crown. Which one takes the Bay crown?
I think Hawke's Bay have won their season. They're not winning this one. Yeah, there's some boys still chasing some demons, or I don't know. I can't bat them in this one. I'm sorry, but yeah, Bay of Plenty.
Yeah, I was looking at, was it 5 rounds ago? It was a close affair, very high scoring, and Bop got the job done by 3 points. So it seems like it will probably be a similar affair. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what kind of preparation the Hawke's Bay team have had.
Lots of pre-workout.
Around all of the interviews with journalists and the police and the incident reports they have to front up to the board of the Hawke's Bay Union. So I would say they didn't follow their proper recovery after the game against Wellington, so there might be a few aches and
they
niggles.
Got the endorphins up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the ice baths probably weren't happening. That's what I'll be saying. But I'm thinking that Hawke's Bay probably not in the same caliber that they were in to beat Wellington, and Bop get this one done. Not a huge margin, but probably not as high scoring as the last game as well.
Okay, so Bay of Plenty are actually coming into the finals, one of the hottest teams in the competition, winning 5 of their last 6, whereas Hawke's Bay has had a chaotic season even at the end, given the shield stuff. They won their first 4 games by 1 score, and they hit some rough form in the middle, losing to Northland by heaps and Auckland by heaps. But then they are coming into the playoffs with a 3-game win streak. So, yeah, maybe I wouldn't be surprised if Hawke's Bay get this done, because they are a very unpredictable team that can turn it on. But I'm going to back Bay of Plenty at home, who have been a very reliable team as of late, to get this done. I've got Bay of Plenty 1-12 at $2.60.
Nice. They do have a lot of – they've got a very stacked back line, though, Hawke's Bay, so they could turn that on at any point. We move into the Rugby World Cup. I'll rattle off the recent scores from pool play. Japan defeated Samoa 28-22. We defeated Italy 96-17. Argentina over Chile 59-5. Fiji just got up over Georgia 17-12. Scotland 82-0 over Romania. 34-14, the Wallabies over Portugal. Eddie Jones seems to think that they're not booing him, but they were booing. I can't remember his interview exactly on it, but he's up to his normal shit. It's like, mate, just pack it in.
Stop putting a microphone in front of that old man.
I know. South Africa 49-18 over Tonga. Were we happy with the performance over Italy?
Oh yeah.
That ecstatic. was impressive.
Yeah. Ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm gutted we didn't get the ton, because we had a great opportunity and then just pushed it a little too hard and went out into touch in that last attempt at scoring. But
yeah,
the rest of the game prior to that was just phenomenal.
There was one lapse just after halftime when we come back into it and we took a little bit of time to move into some momentum. But man, that shit happens when you just absolutely cut a team to bits, and it's like, where do you go to with your structure? I was super impressed with just how we controlled that game from 1 through to 23. It was just really, really impressive.
It was a highly accurate performance, and we just absolutely dominated them with our pace of play and just our ability to get over the advantage line, because we had 97 carries over the ad line, 880 meters carried, both double the Italians' entire stats for those two departments. So you could tell whenever we got the ball, it was just danger signs for them. Well, obviously with the 96-point score, but every time we touched it, it was just had them on the back foot. And then unlike maybe, well, we were kind of good against Namibia, but definitely not against France. We were clinical in terms of finishing off those opportunities. And it was super impressive to see. It was a statement, bro, because Italy, although they're not the caliber of these other teams, they are still technically a tier one nation.
They're in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
They've upset teams in the Six Nations as well. Yeah. Line out for us was super impressive. I can't remember how many we won against the throw, but that was really good.
Three steals. We won 15 of 15 lineouts, and then our scrum was dominant as well. Yeah. 5 from 6 scrums won, and we won 6 against the head.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Crazy.
And now our kicking. We kicked to keep in play, and then we targeted the ruck straight off that, which was an interesting thing to watch when we were playing France. We were just trying to kick to relieve pressure, but this time it had some sort of purpose with it, so that will be interesting.
And you know what worked against Namibia that showed its face here? It was that sweeper when we were on attack as well. That left the Italian defenders in 6s and 7s, and that's really, really where we stripped them on the edges, man, because it's a really effective move to create that overlap, because These better teams like France can deal with it, South Africa and Ireland, they can defend this stuff. But man, when you get it right, it shows how dangerous it can be against lesser competition.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you said it during the game, but it was surprising to see how quickly we demoralized them. We played magnificently, but let's not gloss over the fact that they gave up and just didn't look like they wanted to be there within the first 20 minutes.
After the third try.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I mean, none of our predictions for the score were close at all. And it wasn't finals footy by any means. It was incredibly fast paced, a lot of ball movement, but it was clinical, you know, for what kind of play it was. So very impressive. I'm not sure we'll see a similar style going up against Uruguay.
Yeah.
I think it might be a very different game plan, but really similar scoreline.
So they take, sorry.
I was just going to make a point that our defense was really impressive too. We had monster defense, and that gave us opportunity to counter ruck, in which we got 6 turnovers. Not through pilfering the ball, which is good, because when we try to pilfer it against the other teams, we give away a fuckload of penalties. Mm. So it was actually good to see maybe that coming into our game, just trying to dominate the defensive end and then counter ruck. Tyson Frizzell will be big in that department going forward in this tournament. So
yeah.
It was impressive, man. It's a statement victory.
It was a little bit of relief sitting there watching. And it was an entertaining game to watch. When you get games like that that sort of blow out, it can sort of become like a little bit draining. But it was entertaining throughout the whole game, which was good to see. We take on Uruguay, though, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., Sam Whitelock, game number 150. Looked like Richie McCaw, Conrad, and Stephen Donald. Yeah. They were having a good time together.
Yeah.
Sam Kane back in. We've got a strong back line in this one. And D-Mac at the back, which is I'm glad that you brought that up, because he's going to have a lot more minutes under his belt. Because if there is a guy floating around the back on that short side that's got a little bit of electric footwork, it's him. And Blackadder is getting a run. What do you reckon? 50+, 70+, 100+?
Yeah, I don't know if I was watching the game with one eye closed, but I don't think Sam Kane played well enough really to make it back into the squad.
Well, it is Uruguay. It's kind of like this is a chance for him to test his fitness, to get back into the groove of playing rugby and to play large amounts of minutes to get the feel of things again. Because they've obviously committed to him as captain. Yep. So when it comes to crunch time, he is going to be out on that field. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he missed
Dalton
a couple.
Dalton was outstanding.
Yeah.
He missed a couple like real easy tackles as well, Sam Kane against Italy. So, but I mean, this game against Uruguay is going to be a cricket score again. I don't know what kind of game plan they're going to take. I'm going to expect a little bit more resolve from the Uruguay nation, but just a bit less of the kind of technical ability.
Yeah, I'll try picking this on the nose again as well. I actually got one. I got South Africa to beat Tonga by 31 points. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, there's one there. But I'll go New Zealand to beat Uruguay, 61 points.
I'm going to go 84 to the donut.
Oh, okay. A donut would be impressive against Uruguay, because they've shown they actually have scoring ability.
There's only been four donuts. Yeah. And England have got two of them.
Yeah, their defense is actually quite good. Too bad their attack looks pretty fucking shocking against good opposition like in Argentina, but
yeah.
On the nose, 102-8.
Oh, Jesus.
There he is. Yeah.
I mean, I would think that was a bit silly after before last week's performance, but they've shown that they're really going to put the foot down in these last couple of games.
So. No, I don't mind it. Quick picks.
Can I just say one thing on that performance, though? I have been saying we do have the potential to have an absolutely outstanding performance like we had against Italy just one time in this competition. And I thought we were going to save that for our quarterfinal, which is where we need it the most to get through that really difficult obstacle of either Ireland or South Africa. So I am slightly worried that maybe we've shot our bullet too early. Do you guys get that feeling, or do you reckon this is a we're back feeling?
I think there's two in the chamber. Okay. I do think there's two. Yeah,
well, hopefully there's three. Cause
four.
Yeah, well, I think what it is that it's a different World Cup build up than what we're used to. We're used to just cleaning the pools up. Mm. But I think because we lost to the only bigger competitor in our pool, we needed something early to just prove to ourselves and put everyone else on notice that look what we can do when we play well. So I don't think it's anything too early. I think it was well timed. And if we had pumped or just beaten France, I don't think that would have been the score.
Yeah. Coast this week. Don't score 100. Just save it for next week. quick picks though before we move into the NFL.
Yeah, so after that, on the Saturday morning, we have France versus Italy.
And I'm going to be taking France here, but I think it will be a little bit closer. Italy will want to bounce back. France hopefully have learned some lessons in terms of injury. I'm not sure if DuPont is making some sort of comeback yet. I saw it was quarterfinals, but I don't know how he's been tracking.
So he is, as far as I'm aware, obviously we've been talking for a while now. I haven't been on my Instagram for a bit, but as he is eligible technically to play in this game, whether they do that or not, or just save him for the quarterfinal is still up in the air, but he is physically eligible, which is crazy to me because he's got a plate in his jaw.
Dubain.
This is interesting though, because if Italy win by more than 7 points, France get knocked out.
That won't be true.
No, it is, because they're 4 points behind, so we're both on 10.
Well, Italy would need a bonus point as well,
seven. Yeah. So if they beat
No, but they need four tries as well. They need to score four tries in France.
Four tries. Four tries and win by seven.
Yeah.
So that France don't get the bonus point, the losing bonus point.
Yeah.
Italy could go through, which is crazy to think. I mean, it's very tough to see that happening.
Maybe they just waited for France.
They just thought
they coasted against us.
Yeah.
The old switcheroo.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, yeah. So there's more to these last games of the round than
meets the eye.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see some funny results in some of these other games. But yeah, the logical answer is that France get this done by 11-20 or so.
Okay, and I've got France in that same margin to beat them by 17. So yeah, good game there. Wales versus Georgia, another potentially close game.
Interesting, I'll be leaning towards Wales in this one, but Georgia have showed that they can be very competitive, and Wales don't overly need this at the moment, so that will be...
Georgia, I believe, the last time they played Wales, have a victory.
Defeated them. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, no, I think this one's going to be a close one. I've actually got the same margin, though, Wales 11-20.
Okay, and also copying you there, I've got Wales by 16 to win that one. England Samoa.
England.
Yeah, there's not much to say about this one, really.
Yeah, I think that will be a bit closer, though, because of the nature and when it's being played. Samoa have had some disappointing losses, and they are a physical team. They'll want to go out on this competition in a high note.
Yeah, yeah. England want the win to secure top spot in the pool. Samoa unlikely to get enough to get the job done to go through. So, yeah, I'd see England just putting a few points on them and coasting through.
Yeah, I 100% agree with your take. I think this is going to be probably Samoa's best performance because they've kind of laid a few duds out there and they'll be disappointed in their campaign, but they do have a lot of quality players and have shown glimpses of some ability. So I'm actually going to go England to win it, but not by crazy amount. I've got them by 16. And then a big one, Ireland versus Scotland.
Yeah, I'm going to go Ireland in this one, but I think it is going to be a lot tighter. I think it'll be a little bit more of a high-scoring affair. It won't be your grinded-out sort of game like we saw with South Africa. But, fuck, Ireland are red hot.
And yeah.
I can't stop. So, yeah, Ireland.
If there was ever to be a gentleman's agreement and a handshake, it would be these two teams to get South Africa out of the quarterfinals, because another bonus point win from Scotland gets them through.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting scenario. I mean, you know, they'll just be there, national anthems, look over, wink, wink.
Yeah, nudge.
And they did themselves some good favours by beating Romania 84-0. Ireland is kind of like Christian McCaffrey at the moment. They're kind of, you have to back them because they're playing so well. I've got Ireland to win this. I think it will be high scoring on both sides.
Yeah.
I think Scotland will get to about 20, but I see Ireland scoring some late tries to get it to about 35. So I've got Ireland by 15. Yeah. And then another one with high stakes in that pool D, Argentina versus Japan.
Yeah, this is interesting, eh? Because we've been waiting for like an upset kind of one.
Yeah.
And I'm going Japan in this one because they've proven that they can do it at World Cups. And they didn't put a complete performance in last week against Samoa. So look, I'm going to back them here. The Japs, get up.
Yeah, this one's so tough, man. Like, yeah, exactly the same as you said, Sam. The Japanese have got a history of performing when it matters most and showing tremendous heart. But they're coming up against another team which is basically known for the heart, the dominance, and the tenacity that they play with. So that is probably what could overwhelm Japan. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. I think Argentina get the job done, but incredibly close game.
Yeah, I share your guys' sentiments completely because this will be insanely close. Japan have played some quality football at times, especially in their game last week. They just couldn't put the foot on the throat for the full 80 minutes. Argentina, I will pick them to get this done in the end because at the end of the day, they have played absolutely shit on attack and they've looked way under the standard that they have kept for themselves over the last 10 years, but they still defend at a very high level, and Checa is known for that, and he's brought in David Kidwell, who has also done wonders in that department. So
I'll back
Argentina's defense to get this done. I've got them to win by 7. And then we've got two other games in this competition, Tonga versus Romania.
Tonga.
My notes say, no one cares, Tonga wins.
I don't have to agree. I've got Tonga by 26. I think Romania can kind of make it all right. Nah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who cares? Exactly. And then the last one, it does have a few stakes. If Fiji get pipped here and don't get the bonus point, that is going to be shocking for them. So you got Fiji taking on Portugal. Do they get it done?
They had a tight performance against Georgia, which was a little bit concerning. I thought that they would have blown them out a little bit more. I know Georgia's been competitive through the World Cup.
And they played bad.
Yeah, and it gets me just a little bit worried because I want this for Fiji. And I think everyone's like in New Zealand supporting New Zealand and Fiji.
Yeah, it's Fiji's everyone's team at the moment.
I do hope that they get this done for them. And yeah, look, I'm gonna say statement game from them. They'll get this done 13+.
Yeah, I feel like this one's going to be a state win. I think Aussie's going to go home and we all get to laugh at their early exit.
And I've got Fiji in a somewhat statement win. Portugal, to me, I know they drew 18-all, but I think Portugal is actually better than Georgia. So this could be dicey. I just think that Fiji played like absolute shit against Georgia. I think they're going to turn around and, you know, get a real kick up the ass from their coach and actually play some quality football. I've got them winning by 18 here, but comfortably.
One more quote from Eddie, as he said that he was going to send Korobedi, and I forget the other fella, into the Fijian camp with some kava to hopefully throw them off it. And everyone's been saying, they've played well with kava, mate.
Yeah.
So, Eddie, just coach your team, horse. Yeah. Into the NFL. So we're just going to kick it off with the TAB featured bit. We've got another week with them at the moment. And so the Bills take on the Jags in London, the Dolphins take on the Giants in Miami, and the Chiefs take on the Vikings in Minneapolis. So we've got Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa, and mini goat Patrick Mahomes all to throw 2+ touchdowns in their respective matches. So keep an eye on the boosted option in the TAB. It should be up now or by the time you're listening to this, and jump on it for us. So player performance, though, that impressed us. I'm going back to our boy Puka.
Yeah.
After 4 weeks, he's currently outpacing the 2 best receiving yard season in NFL history in Cooper Kupp and Calvin Johnson. Mm. 2021, Kupp had 431 yards through the first 4 games. 2012, Megatron had 423. Big Puka, he's on 501 receiving yards. On the weekend, he finished with 163 on a 9-for-10 receptions per target and a touchdown. You know what's a little bit wild, though, when I looked at that? Who's the QB for both Kupp and Megatron?
Matthew Stafford.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was like, maybe it's Stafford. He just has a guy, and that's why they brought him over here. Yeah. They just were rubbing the globe, and they knew they were getting Puka, and they had Kupp, and he thought, fuck, well, he'll do it with 2. Yeah, so respect on Puka's name, because he is actually playing well. I thought this might have been just like a 1 or 2 week sort of one-hit wonder, but he's doing it consistently at the moment. There is no Kupp to come back, but Matthew Stafford, have your flowers.
Yeah.
Because that's impressive.
I did also say that as well. I said I wasn't quite sold on Puka because it didn't scream like super talented, but the more I've watched this guy and the numbers he continues to put up, he is actually a quality player, and he's a big, strong carrier. He is very much of the Cooper Kupp mold, and I changed my tune on him, man. Puka is the real deal, and I have been super impressed by him.
Yeah.
Question, you may know this because it intersects your passions. Why is Dana White a fan of him, and why does Puka call him his uncle? Do you see that?
Oh, I don't know that one. No? Curveball. Yeah. We'll get you an answer next week. Yeah. I promise you that.
Yeah, please that do. Is interesting. Yeah. I think it could be the fact that Dana's son plays football, and I think there might be a connection between the two, and it may just be like a, you know, like a South Auckland uncle, everyone's your uncle type thing. But
maybe Dana's part Hawaiian.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
Uncle. But yeah.
He's pretty pink and he doesn't look like a Hawaiian. Yeah.
That's the only reason I know who that guy is, because I see it on Dana's story all the time whenever he does anything good.
Does he? Yeah. It's still taking a while for the name to adjust. So I might say
Puka Nakua. Yeah. It's a cool name. It's a legit cool name. Hey, I've gone with Christian McCaffrey from the 49ers, or should I say Christian McCaffrey, because he has been the white knight to my fantasy team with 48.7 points in their 35-16 win over the Cardinals. And he's averaging a league high at the moment, 30 points per game. And honestly, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, he could be the front runner for MVP right now.
I like that you brought that up, because he is on pace for that. Tyreek Hill was that kind of guy last year. McCaffrey's back at it. I was worried after he left the Panthers, or he had that breakout season with the Panthers between him and Newton, that he'd sort of reached his peak, but this guy is the fucking real deal.
He is the real deal.
And I know you're calling him Christian McCaffrey, but call him Himcaffrey, because that's what I've seen all the signs up on the stadium.
Okay, I think mine's a little more creative, but whatever. 177 total yards, 106 rushing, 71 receiving, 4 total touchdowns, 5.3 yards per carry, 10.1 yards per reception, and his second touchdown in this one was an absolute doozy. Hurdling a defender before running 20 yards for the touchdown. He's the best, man. He's the best running back in the game at the moment. Dual threat, perfect blend of power, speed, agility, and he's not a brother, which is crazy.
Yeah, he rocks the cowboy boots in style. Yeah.
So, man, super impressed by him.
Dual threat running backs, like we keep saying, they're so impressive, but it is actually so great to watch him. And although that sort of Panthers era was outstanding with Newton and them there, fuck, he fits that 49ers uniform and what they're doing right now. It's really good to see. Team performance, though. I'm going back to the game that I wanted to feature last week, and it's actually the Texans. Balanced game from them here against the Steelers. And by that, I mean 81 yards for Pierce. So they had the ground game going really nicely. 168 yards for Nico Collins, which was a game high. And then CJ Stroud, 306 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 sacks, still no interceptions. Back to the stats, the only rookie in NFL history with 900 yards and 0 interceptions. Second most passing yards by a QB in their first 4 starts. Only Cam Newton has more. Third longest streak without an interception to begin their career. Houston, they are going to be a problem.
Damn, and I am so impressed with CJ Stroud, man. Mm. He just continues to put up these high passing yard games and continues to not throw intercepts and play accurate footy. He's going to have, you know, a little bit of trouble getting into the playoffs and maybe winning games this season.
They're growing.
But once he gets some peace, and he's got some good guys in Collins and in Tank Dell already. So they've also got that the tight end from the Cowboys, Dalton Schultz, who was a good security blanket. They're going to be a good team, maybe not this year, but with him playing the way he's playing at quarterback, the Houston Texans are going to be a problem next year. Mm. I think he could be the next sort of star quarterback. He's the star from this generation.
Yeah.
The team who impressed me was your team, actually, the Buffalo Bills. They stole all the hype I was putting on the Miami Dolphins by demolishing them 48-20 with a statement win at home. And I did say it would be tough for Miami in Buffalo, but it was Buffalo's defense that was doing the job, man. They were dominant, shutting down the backfield, doing a good job against the run. I know Achan sort of, he's still eight, but Mostert, two fumbles from him.
Yeah.
They were putting a lot of pressure on Tua as well. And then your dog, man, he is a fucking beast. He has found form again. He was the second option for me for player who impressed, Josh Allen. But I thought Christian McCaffrey with his four touchdowns and with him helping me out in fantasy, I thought I'd give him a little bit of shine. But Josh Allen, 320 yards on 84% completion, four passing touchdowns and one rushing touchdown. Man, he just has games like this and you can see the potential. If he can just... he was good in this game, but if he can just eliminate the interceptions...
He plays too hard.
Yeah.
He knows he can hit it and he just tries to force it.
Perfectly put, because even in his running game, he plays super hard as well. And you
drops a shoulder, jumps a hurdle.
Yeah, he's a big boy and he can, you know, he can take his licks, but the way he runs, it's like so just into the contact and not like any other quarterback. You'd think it's not a sustainable way of play, but... you got to appreciate it when you've got it right in front of you. And Stephon Diggs with also a statement performance in this one. 120 yards, three touchdowns, and then a little pirouette to run 40 yards for his, I think, second touchdown. So, man, they are quality. Buffalo is kind of back with a statement win.
Yeah, I want to go to a Buffalo game, man. That crowd just it's wild, man.
And some tailgates? Would you jump in on someone's tailgate?
Yeah. They've got guys jumping off caravans into tables and stuff. Like, it's next level. Game we want to feature in the upcoming round. I'm going Bills versus the Jags. It's 2:30 a.m. For us on Monday morning because it's in London, so you have to watch the replay, but... it's high-powered Bills offense, and like you said, it's an underrated defense led by an MVP candidate in Josh Allen, taking on Lonlocks Lauren and the young Jags team that showed a lot of growth. You know, the last time that they played each other, it was actually in the 2021-22 season, and the final score was 6-9. No touchdowns, only field goals.
And that was to... you go.
Yeah, and nah, I thought it was to break the streak.
Oh, okay.
They broke the streak 2 weeks earlier against Miami.
My bad.
Nah, I thought it was as well, and I was like, I've hit a gem here. But nah, I went up 2 weeks earlier, and they got it at Miami. But that was Trevor Lawrence's first year with the Jags, and they were coming in off a 1-15 season that year. So fast forward to this week, these teams are way, way different when you look at them now. Stud QBs, fire in the wide receiver column, and both have young guards cooking for them in the run game. So if you're going to watch a replay or highlights on that one, have a look at that because I can guarantee it's going to be fireworks.
Or you could just sniff up some Ramfully Shield plaster and
head down to Bunnings.
Yeah.
You know what? They've got the shovels in there.
You know what
that
game was, though? That was the first time someone got picked off by someone with the same name. Josh Allen got picked off by Josh Allen.
Yeah, so
maybe that's what I was thinking of. But the highlight game I've got for this round is Cowboys at 49ers. Historical rivalry game between two of the most prestigious franchises in the NFL and two of the best teams in the NFL today. Two of the best defenses anyway, which the Cowboys are number one at conceding only 16.5 points per game, while the 49ers are number four conceding 22 points per game. So big difference there, but still top five defenses, both of them. Cowboys looking for revenge after getting knocked out in last season's playoffs by San Francisco 19-12. And it's just a heavyweight clash, man. And two really vocal fan bases smashing into each other with a lot on the line in terms of what these teams are trying to show the rest of the league and how good they are and how good they're going to be going forward in the season. Both teams have a real chance to make a statement in this one. So tune in for that one. 49ers Cowboys.
If there's a game that's going to upset the swing of things, it's this one. And Dallas could definitely get up on it. We move into the power rankings. Last week I had the Miami Dolphins at one, 49ers, Eagles, Chiefs, and then the Bills sneaking in there. So this week, gone 49ers, still on top.
Yeah.
And number two spot, I've got the Philadelphia Eagles. Number three, I've got the Buffalo Bills. And I've dropped my Miami Dolphins down to fourth because I'm just a little bit worried about how easily the Bills shut them down. And that is a high-powered offense, but when you've got a team like that can shut it down and they've got a high-powered offense on the other side, they'll do just fine. And then number five, we've got the Swifty Chiefs in there. And I found it kind of ironic that Travis Kelce came out in the media and said, you're hyping it up a bit too much. But you've been talking about it on your podcast. Yeah, we get it. He's got his followers and now he's telling, back down. But those are my power rankings.
Okay, yes. So last week I had number one, the 49ers. Number two, the Kansas City Chiefs. Number three, the Miami Dolphins. Number four, the Philadelphia Eagles. And number five, the Baltimore Ravens. So it is a little bit of a different looking power rankings this week. At number five, I have the Dallas Cowboys, 3-1. They destroyed the Patriots 38-3, so they're back in the top five for me. Number four, I have the Philadelphia Eagles, 4-0. They only just squeaked by the Commanders, and they have been kind of only just squeaking by a lot of teams so far this year, but they are still 4-0. They still were in the Super Bowl last year, and they still have a high-quality offense, so I've got them at number four. Number three, the Buffalo Bills have stolen that number three spot from the Miami Dolphins for me. They just showed that their defense is quality, and when their offense is ticking on all cylinders, they're elite as well. At number two, this is kind of like they're holding on by the absolute skin of their teeth to the spot, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. I've got them 3-1. They only just got it done against the Jets. I know Zach Wilson kind of showed out and played a lot better than he has been all season.
Second quarter of doom. It was unreal.
So good for him, and that's good for the Jets that they've continued to, you know, back this guy and they had a good performance. But the Chiefs still got the win. You got to credit them for that. 3-1. I still have them as the team in the AFC. And then number one, for the fourth week in a row, San Francisco 49ers, 4-0. They're just so complete. You can name drop their defense. You can name drop their offense. And they just continue to roll with these 30-plus point performances. That's how it goes. Miami Dolphins, the only team to slip out this. Oh, sorry, the Baltimore Ravens as well. But the Miami Dolphins slip out from third out of the top five. I just think they got shown the levels, kind of.
Yeah, I agree. Power rankings sort of are going to stay the sort of top five with this one, but what I might look at introducing next week is we'll do a downer rankings as well, just to go with it. Just your five that are on the down. So yeah, okay, we'll figure out how that's going to work, whether it's just absolute bottom feeders or just some teams that are slipping. Yep. Triple dip touchdown parlay. Last week I had Justin Fields against the Broncos. He decided that he had an arm to throw the ball and didn't want to use his legs in that one, so he went down. Jalen Hurts against the Commanders didn't go through, and then CMC against the Cardinals came through, so that was $5.63, but we went down there.
Yeah, and mine actually came through. I had Justin Jefferson getting a touchdown, Christian McCaffrey, of course he got a touchdown, and Keenan Allen getting it done as well. So yeah, we got a good three touchdowns this week.
Nice. As for this week, I'm going a little bit different. I'm going Derrick Henry up against the Colts, Tyreek Hill up against the Giants, and T. Higgins up against the Cardinals. I'm still worried about that connection between Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrows. I know he's saying, I'm open, I'm almost fucking open, but T. Higgins has proven that he's
actually open.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm going this week.
Yeah, and this week I've got Christian McCaffrey because you just got to ride it till the wheels fall off. Yeah. I know they're facing a strong defense in the Cowboys, but the defense showed their only vulnerability against the run game against Arizona. So I will say he goes 13 from 13 here.
13 weeks, is a straight week, he scored a touchdown. He scored 17 in total.
Damn, that is so crazy, McCaffrey. So I've also gone with you. I've got Tyreek Hill as well for the Dolphins. The Dolphins average 4 passing touchdowns at home this season. So I think with the sun out in Miami, they're going to get Tyreek in some space. And then I've got Travis Kelce because the Swiftie curse has kind of been sprinkled on him. He is, you know, going to get some. Mahomes is going to make sure he gets a touchdown so that he gets touched down. So we've got Travis Kelce. The Vikings also concede 22.25 points per game, which is quite high. So be I like the Chiefs to win a shootout here.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if she's actually at the game this week because it's in Minneapolis as well. So she's been in New York for them. She's been at The Kansas City Chiefs. So is she actually going to go into Minnesota?
How much support is she willing to show?
Exactly. That wraps that up. And the UFC, you've got... Oh, sorry.
Just before we move on, I just want to introduce a new segment I'm calling Casual Corner. I've got a couple stories from a casual fan.
Yeah.
And I just want to get your perspective. So this last week, we had the Jags versus the Falcons, not just only overseas in London, but was also in the Toy Story universe. I want to get your thoughts on whether this is something the NFL should pursue, or whether it's something that you thought, you know, just leave it at that.
I hate it. I've always hated it. I've hated their crossover promotions with kids' movies and Nickelodeon and stuff like that. It's just annoying. It ruins the spectacle of the game with all the slime coming down and then the stupid Toy Story things. I know. Well, actually, when I was watching on Sky, you couldn't actually change the coverage in one of the games I've seen. So I actually had to watch this Nickelodeon Patrick Starr stupid coverage. So I hate it personally. If you could change it from that to just a normal coverage, then it would be fine. But I don't like it.
I agree. I'm watching the game. I don't want to watch Lego.
Yeah.
Like, nah. But it ain't it.
It isn't targeted at us. I can understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to promote a movie and also making it appealing to younger audiences.
Yeah.
I'm not a younger audience, so it just pisses me off. But I wish you could just change the coverage, like sort of like you can do with the
commentary.
The commentary,
The only thing I thought was funny with the Toy Story one, they had Spike the Slinky Dog as the down marker, and so he'd have one hit was a down and then his ass. And so it was like a time where there was like an incomplete, and it was a penalty, and so he had to back himself up and watch the Slinky get longer. But anyway, I don't like it at all myself personally, but we're not the target audience.
I'll tell you what I do like. I like that segment, so keep bringing some.
I've still got one more. We're still live in the casual
corner.
I
don't like it that
much. No. All right. So this season already, we've seen a few what some people might call controversial moments or plays or decisions, and that don't really go along with the traditional way a team should play late in the game and the decision to what play to make. And the most recent example is late with about 1:40 left on the clock. Penny Holmes gets a break from quite far out, runs towards the end zone, and then takes it out of field.
That's clock management.
Just right at the end.
Sorry.
But is it strange to not attempt the touchdown when there was one defender in front of him with his own team member blocking him?
A perfect example of that is you saw it in the Super Bowl and the way that they managed the clock there.
Mm.
What they're trying to do is a team only has a certain amount of timeouts and ways that they can stop the clock. And all he's trying to do is just keep the clock rolling and increase the yardage and just burn it out. So to like a casual fan when you're seeing it, because I think it was Pacheco just afterwards had the same chance and he just went
pulled
short.
Pulled up on a dime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's fucking frustrating when you're a punter and you're like, come on, bro.
That's the thing, right? Because
it's clock management.
There was the line, which was -8.5. And so there was a lot of people that were riding on a bigger margin.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of controversial.
What I can compare it to is in the NBA, I don't know if you've seen that thing of Magic Johnson hitting the iconic hook shot and then he goes, damn, I didn't mean to leave 2 seconds on the clock. You're trying to run down the clock as much as you can to deny the other team of an opportunity to either tie the game or win the game.
It is frustrating, and it's the same as like you're playing Madden and there's a couple seconds left and you're up big and the coach's suggestions is take a knee, but you want to keep playing because you want to see the sport play.
Yeah, so you don't think that's a definitive pat on the bookie's back. You
know, frustrating.
That's not a Vegas call-in.
It's frustrating, but that is the reason, is they're just trying to mitigate the clock, because you've seen they have these Hail Mary plays that have come off before. So you are seeing it, and like when you see it on two occasions, like you saw on the weekend, when you're like, he could make a play there and score and put his team up, but there's room for error. So
it's not the first time you'll see this play, and it's not the last time if you continue to watch NFL. They do this a lot.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, well, that's been Casual Corner for this week. If I have any other moments where I think, let's discuss,
because
I'm ignorant, I'll bring it up.
I liked it. Now we go to some more casual stuff. We got the UFC Fight Night. We got a lightweight bout main event in Vegas. We've got number 10, Grant Dawson, $1.24 favorite, taking on Bobby Green, $3.95 underdog. Dawson, 21-1, riding a 12-fight undefeated streak. Maybe, in my opinion, the third equal best grappler in the lightweight division, equal with Gamrot underneath both Oliveira and Makhachev, because he's outstanding, man. He's an excellent wrestler, excellent top control, extremely threatening with his submissions. Stand-up is still very iffy, but he moves defensively kind of all right, so you can kind of give him that. Bobby Green, we know who he is, 45-fight veteran. One of my favorite fighters, very ghetto, loves to talk in the cage, which you're a big fan of guys who do that. Very unorthodox boxer with his hands always very low, like down by his hips, very reliant on his reflexes, and uses his a shoulder roll to usually defend punches. Insanely quick hands. He constantly switches stances and throws jabs off each stance. It's a disrupting opponent's rhythms. Good anti-wrestler and has a wrestling background, but just prefers to fight on the feet because he is a very, very good boxer. Simon, where do you see this one going? It's the typical striker versus grappler matchup. Who do you think comes out on top?
Yeah, see, I mean, I didn't know Dawson too well, so I had a look at his results, and one of those 12 wins is actually a grappling match. I saw that there's 11 fights in mixed martial arts, 9 of them in the UFC. There's a majority draw in there as well, but yeah, 11.
Ricky Glenn?
Yeah, so a massive, massive win streak that he's got built, so it'll be impressive to see if he can get this job done. Like you said, with Bobby Green being the anti-wrestler, his last win was an arm triangle against Tony Ferguson, who's a well-known grappler. So this will be an interesting fight for Dawson, and I mean, yeah, I think the way this unfolds is Bobby will obviously want to keep this on the feet as much as possible, and Dawson will try and shoot to get to the ground, because I'm assuming that's where he sees the advantage. But he's not a complete slouch with the hands, Grant Dawson, as well. He can throw some combos, but not the same level at all. I think what happens is it's a 5-round fight. I think Bobby dominates early the first few rounds. He gets the edge on the striking. I think the pace starts to slow. I see Dawson taking a lot of shots later in the round to try and turn it over. He might land a few and then get the ground control and submission and damage in a few early rounds, but most likely Bobby goes up on the scorecard in the first 3 rounds. Then I think the pace is going to slow. I think Dawson gets a lot more control. And I'm picking that Dawson gets a ground and pound TKO in round 4 or 5.
Yeah. Okay. Sam, do you agree with that?
No, I don't actually. Yeah.
No, you suck.
I am a Bobby fan. I was entertained by it. I haven't watched a hell of a lot of his fights, but I did like what he brought to the card. But for our Friday punts this week, we've got a little man that does love the UFC, and that is Louis Cassidy, who's thrown in Grant Dawson for a submission in that, and I've been talking to him a little bit about it, and that's where I'm going in this one. So I'm going to go towards Grant Dawson to get the submission here, and I'm going to call it on the nose for a round and say round 3.
Okay, so we actually are all agreeing here. So what Grant Dawson did to Ismagulov, who was one of the most dangerous upcoming fighters in the lightweight division, and then also what he did to Marco Madsen, who is a Greco-Roman Olympic silver medalist, was super impressive to me. It showed that he is, you know, very dominant in his grappling. And Bobby Green is a good anti-wrestler, but he can get taken down. And he was taken down and submitted by Islam Makhachev in the first round in their fight. And I don't think there is that many levels between Grant Dawson and Islam Makhachev, especially from what I've seen from Grant Dawson in his last couple of fights, man. This guy is actually a really good grappler. I will also say Bobby's hands still look sharp, but he is 37 and he is slowing down. Like, I think his, because he is really reliant on his reactions and his reflexes.
Yeah.
I think his reactions are really slowing down, because in his last 3 fights against Tony Ferguson, Gordon, and Drew Dober, he was getting touched a lot more than I'm used to seeing him, like maybe 3-4 years ago, like fights with Fazeev and stuff like that, where he was pretty much untouchable. He is slowing down and he is starting to get caught. I don't think Grant Dawson's going to take advantage of that, but it's just something that...
to be mindful of.
Something to be mindful of, because I think Bobby Green is on that trajectory of his career. We could see him maybe even slower in this fight. Is there a world where this could snowball completely out of control for Grant Dawson and he gets all his takedowns stuffed? And because with Bobby Green's style and output, that could definitely happen. It could be a few stuffed takedowns and then starts talking, and starts really putting the damage on him. But I don't see that here, man. Grant Dawson is 29 years old. He is an elite grappler. He is working his way to the title. He is a smart young man. I think he is going to get him with a submission. I've got Grant Dawson by sub, $2.40. And I've got it even earlier than you guys. I've got it in round 2 at $8.
Wow. Oh, nice. Just quickly,
which is unfortunate because I love Bobby Green.
Yeah, same. Yeah, he is the king.
Yeah.
Before we see it out, have you guys, you're aware of the Adesanya movie or documentary?
Yeah, we've been trying to plan.
Trying to go there.
I'm kind of interested to go see it as well. I had a guy from work we were talking about today went to the premiere of it. Yeah. He was the only one in the cinema.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was kind of wild. I thought that would have got a lot more hype, but obviously after the recent loss, everyone's sort of hating a little bit.
I mean, that's tall poppy syndrome if I've ever seen it. No, I'm still interested in it. I want to see it. Yeah.
Well, that's another one in the books for us. Stick around with the episodes. I know the NRL is over at the moment, but we do have the World Cup, which will be sort of going a little bit, we'll be a bit more invested into now that we're into the quarterfinal stage and coming hopefully we'll be discussing the All Blacks for a few more rounds. Longer. NPC's wrapping up. NFL. We've still got lots to talk about. And like Simon's Corner, we might introduce a couple of other things. So stick around. Follow us on, obviously, the Instagram page, TikTok, all of the social media, Twitter, Threads if you're on that. And jump on the TAB Booster bet as well. So jump behind us and support. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.